Monster Hunter Reel 2. While you were Runfog, you got these Brinkhouse. Did you also get the Mark 6Bs tanks or 6As there?
The Mark 6Bs came.
What were they like? Because
a lot of them were actually utilitarian than at all.
What were they? Were they a tank or were they an armoured car?
It was a light tank, you know. Wasn't it? The armour plating was now, when they say, very good, you know.
Did people think much of them?
At that particular time, they had to, because that was the only thing they got, you know.
But you didn't have a go on them?
I didn't have a go, no.
Now, what sort of thing were you doing while you were at Runfold? I think we were there 3 or 4 months.
Well, I was in brain gun carriers, and I was actually getting training on the brain gun. And just in case that I was going to be beating the brain guns, you know, the brain gun carriers.
So you spent a fair amount of time training.
That's right.
And by then, had you noticed any? I mean, were you settled into the units? How were you getting on with the other lads?
Actually, this guy that's coming up in October, he comes up about October, and he goes to the Yeomanry dinner with me. He's an Englishman. He comes from Yorkshire. Harold Wilson, his name is, and he was one of the guys that came from Catterick. He was posted from Catterick to the 5th and 4th.
Now, when was that? At Runfold.
At Runfold, that's right.
And what was he like, Harold?
Oh, he was a good lad. He was a regular soldier, like, you know. I think he'd only been in about 6 months in the regulars, you know.
So he wasn't a hardened old pro.
He wasn't a hardened pro, but he was joined up, you know, as a regular.
So he was your particular mate at the time.
That's right. He was there.
And what about the rest of them? Was it a good unit to be part of? Were the lads friendly?
Perfect. Everybody knew each other, you know. That was good. Good governorship, you know.
And what about the NCOs? Are there any, you were in C Squadron.
I was in C Squadron.
Who were the NCOs you best knew or were in charge of?
Well, there was Sergeant Corporal Brooksbank.
Corporal?
Brooksbank.
What was he like?
He was a wee guy. He was actually a minor in city life. And the other one was Sergeant Hutton. He was a window cleaner.
What was he like?
He was quite good. And then there was a... let me see now. Troop Sergeant Major Andrew Henderson. Actually, he was sort of quartermaster too.
Would you be dealing with him a fair amount?
No, if you were getting equipment, like, you always went there to see him.
But what about when you were in the lorries? Who was running the lorries? Not sure.
I'm not sure about that, no.
These NCOs, were they friend? What type of NCO then? Were they strict and fair, or what?
They were strict, and you know, they were fair, you know. I mean, they actually knew you from weekend camps and so forth, you know, that you got used to them, you know.
Would you call them by their first name, or would...
No, it was usually... Well, you would do if they allowed it, you know.
But mostly you'd call them by their rank.
That's right, call them.
So you could say, you'd say sergeant, not sergeant.
No, that's right. Yeah.
And what about the officers? Which officers do you remember from that time?
Well, the officers are the Major Allison Spencer.
What was he like?
He was quite good, and I'll tell you, I think he was one of the best tacticians I've ever been trained with, you know, because he had plenty of confidence in him, because he wouldn't do nothing that he wouldn't do himself. I mean, like, so, you know, maybe for training during the exercises and that, he would tell you that you had to come out that certain way, face forward, or, you know. And I thought it stood us in good stead when we went into action.
Was he a strict officer?
He was very strict, aye.
Did you mind that?
I didn't mind that. I remember him You know, there seemed to be a wee speck on my boot once, and I got cuckoo drill for that, for having that wee speck on my polished boot, you know. I don't know what I mean. It's one of these things that you have to contend with, you know.
What other officers at that time?
Yeah, and then there was J.E. Hutchison,
Hutchison,
the flour mills. They were all business people, you know.
Is this Sir Hutchison who was Pinky Hutchison, or is this another
Pinky,
one?
Pinky, that's him, that's right.
He used to, he went on to command A squadron,
I think.
He was what was good, he like?
He was quite good. I seen him at the last Yomery dinner there for the first time for years, you know.
And what was he like as an officer?
He was quite good, very good. And then he had his, was either his brother or his cousin. And he was called G.G.O. Hutchison. But he was a bit of a, I couldn't describe him, but it was quite good, you know. It was friendly and that, you know.
Any other officers you remember? There's McIntosh, of course, who was your old boss.
Sandy McIntosh.
And he was colonel then. What was he like as a colonel?
He was quite good, quite a good colonel, And
would you see much of the colonel as a trooper?
Well, usually on schemes and that, they were usually on the scene, you know. Same as Alistair Spencer, they were the same.
What about McIntyre? Do you remember him?
Oh, I remember him. I know. He was in the excuse column again.
What was he like?
Well, I never got much in touch with him at all. They were separate, you know, excuse column and A, B, and C.
So you knew of him, but you didn't know him?
I didn't know.
So I should have. Spencer Nairn was commanding your squadron, wasn't he?
He was a C-squadron.
C-squadron leader, yes. That's probably enough. So, while you were training on the Brents, were you still doing your normal duties on the lorries, or had you stopped doing that for a while?
I was stopped doing that for a while, and then we went back on the lorries again, you know.
Did you do any of the... They were doing some anti-parachutist patrols up on the downs, on the hog's back and things. Did you do any of that?
No, I never did that.
Now, around about this time, there was talk of the regiment going to France to take over, you know, and they were getting rid of some of the younger ones, and all sorts of things were happening. Were you aware of this?
Oh, yes. Well, actually, John Donnelly, he was posted to the Coast of Reserves, and there was another one there, if I'm getting there. Quite a few of them was posted to because they were underage.
And who replaced them?
The guys that was coming from Catholic, like that, Wilson and so forth, and then there was another Wilson, they called him Doug Wilson. He was an old sweaty from before the war. He was in India and so forth. I don't know if he's still living there or not, but he came from York.
Did you mind these? That's two English. I mean, I know you got a lot of English later on, but did it? I mean, you were a Scottish unit,
that's right.
But were you bothered by having English in the ranks at all?
No. We're all in Big Abbey family.
So you didn't think about it? It wasn't an issue?
No, it's just whatever.
And that never changed, even when you got the lot, because you had a lot come later on.
That's right.
The next thing then is, you didn't go to France, because they came back. I mean, Dunkirk.
That's right, and he actually, because remember that morning, moved out from Farnham.
What do you remember of it?
I always remember this. We were marching right up to the station at Farnham. And Sandy McIntosh was watching to see if anybody was smoking, you know. Because the Jerry's was coming across occasionally. And he caught somebody smoking, I don't know. But however, that was the rule that day, and then we got on the trains and that, and got quite the way down to Southampton, and then from Southampton something happened that the France had capitulated, and the Dunkirk business started, and we were put on trains again and got posted right to Stranraer, in Stranraer to learn. And we know the brain gun carriers with us at that particular time.
They were on the trains, were they?
Yeah, they were on the trains, and we got across, we were on cattle boats. Slept on cattle boats that night, and when we got across to Laden, we were moved up to a place called Dungannon, if you've heard of that now. That's where all the trouble. In fact, these lads were arrested and ready for the chop.
Now, on the way to Dungannon, there was supposed to be some terrible trouble with the train.
That's right.
Now, do you remember this story? What exactly happened?
It was a salient, and they couldn't get up this, and they had to get another train for to get the Dungannon colours up to the level, you know, for getting them off.
So there's just too much weight on the train.
Too much weight, that's it. That's right. And then they got settled in, and they... Well, actually, we were billeted, C Squadron was billeted up in a castle, and it was an Ordnance castle anyway, and the rest of the squadrons were all, you know, posted round about, like say A, B and C and HQ, they were all, HQ was down in the middle of the town.
And what were the billets like in the castle?
Not quite good, just like a drill hall, you know, they were just the very same double tier beds again.
And you were with the, what was your status? You'd been trained as a Bren carrier, but were you actually in a troop, or were you still in headquarters transport, B echelon, A echelon?
We were in a troop at that day.
Which troop were you in, do you know? But you weren't in transport, you were a Bren carrier troop.
A Bren carrier and a troop, like, you know.
What about, they did a lot of exercises while they were at Dungannon,
that's
because
right.
They thought the Germans might land in Era, Southern Ireland.
That's right.
Now, were you aware of what of that, or were you aware of these exercises?
I was not aware of what was going to happen in North, if they came up through Germany, through South Ireland.
What were the exercises like?
Oh, they were quite good. The people were, they could have done enough for us.
No, stick into the exercises. How? What did you actually do? I mean, what were they using?
They were using the Bren gun carriers, Mark 6Bs.
And what were they using them for? Reconnaissance or for putting out fighting positions? And were you keeping the machine guns on the Bren carrier, or were you unloading them like they did?
Well, you got dismounted action and different places you went.
What was dismounted action? Can you just explain what it meant?
You had to take the gun out of the hold in front of you and put the gun over the side and then jump and then mount it again, you know, on the ground so that you could fire at any targets that you were.
Now, how many men were there in the crew of the Bren gun carrier?
One, two, three.
So there's a driver, and that would be you?
That's right.
And you drove it?
And then there was a wireless officer, and then the crew commander.
Now, where was the wireless officer? Was he next to you?
He was next to you.
And the crew commander?
Was in the middle of the carrier.
And who was out on the back?
There was nobody on the back. No.
So the back was empty?
Empty.
Okay. And where the machine gun was where?
It was in front. And then there was
it was mounted so it could fire.
That's right.
It wasn't just loose in the back then.
It was mounted and they had what you call it, was it a Fiat or a Fiat gun. Supposed to be for anti tank.
A boy's anti tank rifle.
Anti tank rifle, that's it.
A big rifle.
But it wasn't, it was very, very slim. It was like a rifle, you know, but that's what they had in front. Supposed to be trying to hit German tanks.
What did you think of that?
I didn't think much of it, no. That was cool.
So that was dismounted action. What other things were you practicing in? Were you meant to fire things from the Bren gun carrier? I mean, keep the machine gun.
It was just imaginary. But they took you to the ranges and you did all your firing there, you know.
But, I mean, was it designed so that you could fire it from the Bren gun carrier?
Oh, yes, it was designed that.
So you could, like a tank, but not like a tank.
You could have put magazines on them.
Were the Bren gun carriers popular? I mean, they're a funny vehicle, aren't they?
They were quick, you know, they were fast, but as far as the, you know, protection, that it was...
Were they seen as a reconnaissance vehicle or as a fighting vehicle?
I think both. There's reconnaissance and fighting.
And do you remember anything particular about the exercises you used to do? I mean, was there any ever anything happened particularly?
Funny
wise, anyway, you know, anything funny that happened, or just anything that, where the exercise went wrong or right, you know.
Well, I can always remember when we were on schemes and that, and he always looked about to see if he could get some extra food, you know, because it was pretty hard at that time, you know. And I can always remember going in this farmhouse. In this farm, this woman laid out a great big thing for me, you know. And I'm sitting, and he's standing up, and Josh comes in. God, I could have gone under the table. However, he never said nothing. He'd take a brain and he'd talk. He's dead now, that guy. So
He didn't pick you up on it later, though?
No, he didn't know. He never said nothing, no. But, at that particular time, you were hungry, you know.
Now, the local people, you mentioned it earlier, but they seem to have been particularly friendly, the Dunleavy.
Oh, they would do that. They would come out and they would give you the last bite. They would, Irish cons and so forth. Quite good, good.
And anything else about Dungannon?
Well, I got very friendly with an Irish constabulary chap there, and we used to go down the other night for the supper, you know. And they were good to us, you know. And I could always remember going on the route march. And Sandy McIntosh was taking us on this route. This was supposed to be learning for the shooting, you know, if he said we'd done Kirk. And I could always remember we were supposed to meet these vehicles at a particular thing and a particular place. And when we got to them, the one there, he had lost his copper pin. And I think we did about 30 miles that day. Of course, when we got back, the blisters were like that. And I can always remember this Harold Wilson and I going down to this lady's house to get the blisters burst and stick the blisters put on them. It was really a laugh, you know, but, Sandy had lost his compass pin, or his map reading anyway, it turned out right in the end.
Did you do much route marching like that?
There was quite a lot of route marches. They were always training for you to see if you were fit or to carry on. I suppose the guys that were there, and from France and that, they had a lot of marching to get back to the beaches now.
So it was part of that. Now, in December, you were sent off to Bessbrook, or the unit was. And there was a bit of trouble because the locals wanted you to spend Christmas with them, I believe. You know, and they were. Do you remember all this?
I remember that. We got to Bessbrook. We were there about 6 months. And they decided that they would that we would go back and they would have to see. That's right. They wanted us for the Dungannon people wanted us to come back for a Christmas party, and apparently they either written to Churchill or some of these guys for to get permission to bring us down for this party, you know, and quite a lot of lorries was laid on for to take them down, you know.
Did you go back for it?
I didn't go, no. I don't know what happened then, but I didn't get back, no.
Now, what was Bessbrook like? Where were you billeted there?
We were billeted in a school. It was either a high school. And it was just the same again, double key of theirs. It was quite good.
And were the locals as friendly in Bessbrook?
Well, they were good. They were all religions there. The Catholics, Quakers, Presbyterians, you name it. They were all round about there.
So no problem at all?
No problem whatsoever, no.
What did the training change at all at Bessbrook? So anything else about Ireland before we go back?
Well, actually, what happened? I went on leave, and when I got back, I got a telegram. You know, when my leave was finished, to tell me I was to report to Gisborne Whitby in Yorkshire. So I had to go down there and report there. And that was how I finished up there. And then I did about a year in Whitby.
Now, where were you billeted at Whitby?
Let me see now. Well, in private houses.
Were the people still there, or had they been cleared out?
They've been cleared out. They come and leave the houses.
Did you have to respect, you know,
the
decor, fixtures and fittings?
Yeah, well, that's what you had to just. I mean, when you were lying on the floor, there were no beds or anything like that then. It was a sort of, you call it, platform thing you lay on and you laid your bed out. And there were no mattresses or anything like that, you know.
And while you were at Whitby, you went from being the reconnaissance regiment, you know,
right,
to being an armoured regiment.
That's
and
right.
And you took
that,
in
that the Valentine dance at that time.
And you stopped, you became part of the 11th Armoured Division.
That's right, 29th Armoured Division.
Sorry, yeah, that's what I was going to say. And now, how did that affect you? Because you'd been a Brengen carrier driver.
Well, that's when I started moving into the trucks.
Back to the trucks.
To the trucks again,
now, why was that? Why didn't they make you into a Valentine driver, would you say?
No, I wasn't a Valentine driver.
No, why didn't they make you one?
No, they didn't. No, I suppose it was just an assessment of what you could do. I was never a tank driver, you know. So I was mainly on the trucks all the time, you know.
So did you ever, you never drove a Valentine?
No, never drove.
What did you think? You know, they're your tanks in the unit. I know you didn't drive. What did you think of the Valentine?
They were quite good, but they were too small, I think. You know, the one like the Comet went. It was a fast vehicle.
What about the armour and the gun? Because there wasn't much of a gun on it, was
there? It was a bit too pointy, I think. Was it too pointy? But
you thought it was all right? I mean,
well, as far as I could see, it was all right.
Did you have any idea what German tanks were like at that stage? Had you heard anything about?
Well, we've seen photographs of them, German tanks and no German tanks, Panzers. Actually, I've got a photograph of them. It was taken in Dunkirk. One of the guys that gave me, you know. I never seen much of that.
So you didn't know much about Germany. Now you went back to the transport. So how was the transport organised at this stage then?
Well,
you were still secret. You were always secret.
We had Major Harry Melville, H.P. Melville. He was the troop commander, and he was taking us out on sort of.
Now, when you say troop commander,
he was in charge of the lorries and that, you know.
Just a C squadron?
C squadron, that's right.
So, and was this the B echelon or the A echelon or both he was in charge
of? There were two. He was charged A1 and the echelon.
That's what he commanded?
That's right, yeah.
And what did A1 and A consist of, do you remember? At that time?
Oh, I just couldn't remember what many vehicles I had, but quite a few.
Quite a few lorries.
I would say two or three lorries.
And on top of that, each other squadron would have an A echelon as well. A1 and A.
They were the same.
Would every squadron have a B echelon, or was B echelon something else?
I don't remember a B echelon. So
B echelon would be a headquarters thing. I mean, regimental headquarters.
Regimental,
And what was Harry Melville? Was he a captain? Well,
he was a captain at that particular time.
What was Melville like?
He was good, very good. He could lead anything, but leading, he could take you were safe with him, you know. You had that feeling that you wouldn't go off the path.
So he was competent?
Oh, very competent.
And what was he like as a bloke?
Oh, he was a good chap. He was good.
Did he have an informal approach, or was he strict?
No, he wasn't strict. He was informal, but you know, he was good, and we knew where well, we stood with him, you know.
And what about NCOs in?
Oh well, we had the. Let me see. I just can't remember. Well, was that?
And this troop. Sorry, was it called headquarters troop, or what was this troop called? Did it have a name?
Ours was Chief Squadron.
Yeah.
And
what was Melville's troop called?
It was called Chief Squadron. He was at Chief Squadron. But he was in charge of all the different units, you know.
So he was at HQ Squadron.
HQ Squadron.
But he was in charge of your A1 echelon in C Squadron.
C Squadron, so that's right.
You were all together with him, under his command.
And we went into action with him, that's right.
And what sort of thing were you doing at Whitby?
Just the same as what we were doing. We were training for the second front. Actually, what you call it, Montgomery. He was in the Middle East at that particular time. This is what he was sizing up. You know, he was. Yeah, this particular Lund Armour Division was meant for the second front, so we were kept in England most of the time up to where it was in DD.
Did the training change at all while you were at Whitby? I mean, you were there about a year, weren't you?
That's right. It was about the same, you know. It was about the same.
So there's no particular exercise stands out? It's all a routine as far as you're
concerned? It's routine. And then from there, went from Whitby down to...
I think you went to Hove and Brighton first.
That's right, Hove, and then we were stationed outside Brighton. I thought it was a. Let me see, it was a group of Protestants that were there for quite a few months, and then we used to go into Brighton, you know, occasionally.
And the training there again, just as far as you're concerned,
the same. They were turning up, that's right. And schemes too, went in different schemes, you know. I think one of the schemes is called Eagle, I think, you know. And they were all ascertaining to, you know, to the second front.